Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. One of, if not the most common way people feel that they're helping the environment is by recycling. And it seems easy enough. We put glass, plastic, cardboard, and paper into a recycling bin. Then it's collected. Then it's taken to a recycling facility, it gets processed, and it comes back out as a new product. However, the process is much more complicated. We're talking about recycling this hour, why it is so complicated, and how it can be done to benefit the environment. Joining us now is Brian King, the Executive Vice President of Product Management and Marketing for Advanced Drainage Systems. Welcome back to All Sides, Brian.
Thanks.
And also with us is Jeff Snyder, Senior Vice President of Recycling for Rumpke Waste and Recycling. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks, Amy.
So, Jeff, let's start with the big question that I asked. Why is recycling so complicated? I feel like every time I have an item, I go through a puzzle in my head trying to decide where it needs to go. Recycling bin, trash, am I doing the right thing? Why does that happen?
No, for sure. And listen, there's a series of decisions that we all make when we think about what something can be recycled or not recycled. And it really starts at the grocery store when we go and buy what we buy every day. Everything we buy comes in a package, and that's really what we do in recycling is we collect and we sort packaging and then sell that packaging into the marketplace to be made back into new packaging. So I think there's decisions we make at the grocery store. There's decisions then we make at our home. Does it go in the trash or does it go in the recycling bin? How does it need to be prepared? Is a little bit of food residue allowed or not allowed? What do I do with this cap? So there's a ton of rules. I say a ton of rules. We try to make it as simple as we possibly can, and we try to answer all those questions for all of our customers. But we're constantly talking about it. That's why I love doing these type of things, is to help people understand about how to prepare recycling. We have a list online that talks about exactly what you can put in the recycling bin, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and how it's supposed to be prepared when you put it in the bin. So super important that we continue to do that and continue to talk about it and willing to answer any of those questions today if we get to that point.
Yeah, we will get to a lot of those questions that you just posed, and I'm sure everyone has in their head throughout the hour. So if our listeners stay with us, and if we don't answer your question later in the hour, we'll take some calls so that we can get some more questions about recycling, because I'm sure maybe we'll have a can we stump Jeff situation here. Maybe not. But Brian, I want to bring you into the conversation, because one of the reasons we're doing a show on recycling today is because we found out that your company, Advanced Drainage Systems, is one of the largest recyclers of plastic in North America, and you're located right here in Central Ohio. So how does a drain company end up being such a big plastic recycler?
Well, it started a while ago. It started back in the 70s, and I'll be really honest, it was because recycled material was cheaper than virgin resin. And so it was a financially driven conversation.
Wait, is it still?
It fluctuates. I mean, yeah. we can talk about the differences between virgin and recycled resin, but it does fluctuate.
And but that's so how you got into the business.
That's how we got into the business.
Yeah,
frankly, I would tell you, I think all sustainability programs, all recycling programs, where they make sense is where you can actually make money doing it, right? And that's one of the biggest challenges, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later on, but nobody pays you to put your recycling into the bin. You wish they did, but for me to put more recycling in, or someone, across the road at OSU to put more in their recycling, no one pays you to do that. Even though me, as a purchaser of recycled material, I'll pay you more for it. And so the normal economics of where, I will pay more for something if I have a higher demand doesn't really work in the recycling business. And that's probably one of the challenges that we have for, increasing the investment in recycling and actually getting recycling rates to go up.
Yeah, Jeff, let's talk about that, about the why people recycle. Because I feel like for decades, it's just been told, like, this is the way you can do something. You can help the environment. But if you put the recycled stuff into the bin, but still not everybody does it. But there's some people who feel, I don't know if empathy for the earth is the right word, but like, what makes one person recycle or not? Is it just a time? Is it something with how they feel? Like, do you know?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things when you think about why consumers or why the public would recycle or not recycle. I think, do you have it available? All right. Is it really driven in the city or the area or the neighborhood that you live in? you know, is there a cost to it? Do I get that cart for free? Do I have to pay for that cart? How often does it get picked up, every week or every other week? And all those things are all variables. But I think there's going to have to be a want for Rumpke, and what we really want to do is save life in our landfills. All right. So we own and operate 16 landfills in Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky. And the more recycling material we put into those landfills that could be turned into new products is just taking up space for really what we want those landfills to be used for, and that's trash, mm-hmm. Things that cannot be recycled. So that's our energy around it. That's why we made the largest investment in Rumpke's history right here in Columbus, Ohio, in recycling. It wasn't in landfills, and it wasn't in trucks, and it wasn't in the other things that have to do with the waste and recycling industry. It was really in recycling, because that's what's driving what we're trying to accomplish when we're trying to use those landfills for what they're supposed to be used for, and then also turn those recycled things that can turn back into something new, and being able to get that story out there with everybody is just really critical.
And Brian, what do you tell people whenever you tell them where you work and that you're one of the largest recyclers of plastic in North America? Do you then look at them and say, do you recycle plastic?
We do, actually. I mean, yeah. We talk a lot about it, and we also say to people, yes, it works. I mean, there's a little bit of disbelief that you can actually, A, recycle plastic, or that something that you're putting into your recycle bin actually goes to someone that uses it, or a company that uses it, or it ends up in the landfill. You hear that a lot, right, is the disbelief is, oh, I'm not sure if what I put into the blue box actually ends up getting recycled or if it goes to the landfill. The other thing that Jeff mentioned that we hear about at the Recycling Partnership, and we're a member of that, which is a group of companies that try to increase recycling, is it really is access. And if you have access, most people will do the right thing, which is drop your recycled materials into that box. 40% of U.S. households still do not have access to curbside recycling. That's a shocking number, right?
Oh, okay. Because I live in a city, I guess, right. I have the bin. I guess I just assumed more people than that. So you're talking maybe in more rural areas?
Potentially rural, or if you live in multifamily. A lot of multifamily facilities don't have recycling. Just because it's either managed by the co-op and they've decided that that's not something they want to do. It's a bit of a pain because you have to have all these individual boxes, and then you have to have a collection facility. And so a lot of people just don't have access to it. And if you make it easy, I mean, I was talking earlier with Jeff across the road at Ohio State. They've made a really smart investment in putting lots of receptacles to be able to collect recyclables. So it's easy. Wherever you're grabbing your beverage, wherever you have to recycle, you've got something to drop it into. And that actually drives recycling rates.
Yeah, and just to expand on that just a little bit, if you think about the 11.8 million people that live in the state of Ohio, 3.8 million of them live in single-family households, and then another million of them live in apartment complexes. To your point, Brian, I think, you know, if you think about the recycling rate in multifamily homes here in the state of Ohio, it's 8%. So we have it's 8%. We have a huge challenge when it comes to multifamily homes. But if you look at single-family households, 92% of the single-family households in the state of Ohio have access to recycling, which is a huge number. The participation rate is only 52%.
So people who actually use the
bins.
That's
right. So people have access to recycling. Over 90% do, but only 50% of those folks actually use it.
And so are you trying, you're saying that your main mission is you're trying to have more space in the landfills. Is that the what we were taught for decades in school, where we're saving the earth? Is that a part of it too? I mean, are we helping, or is it just it's the landfill?
No doubt. The landfill space is a huge part of it, but you know, every time that we can take a plastic water bottle and turn it back into a water bottle, that's a good thing. Right. Every time we can take a corrugated box and turn it back into a new corrugated box that shows up in our shelf 10 days later from the time you put it in the recycling bin, that's a good thing. And we want to continue to do those things. So going box to box or bottle to bottle is very important. But also there's another huge part, and this is where Brian and I work together, is being able to turn plastic back into a durable good. Right. And I think Brian can talk a lot about that. But that's also very, very important to be able to put those plastics more into an end of life reuse state instead of putting them in a landfill where they sit for 40, 50, 60 years and sometimes longer and never actually break down.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about recycling with Jeff Snyder, Senior Vice President of Recycling for Rumpke Waste and Recycling, and also Brian King, Executive Vice President of Product Management and Marketing for Advanced Drainage Systems. So as one of the largest recyclers of plastic, is it all plastics or do you need a specific type of plastic?
So we use specifically HDP and polypropylene, which if you've ever looked at the chasing arrows on the
I know
backside.
What I was you, like, what are those words?
Yeah, okay. you know the arrows or the symbols that are on the back and they have a number inside them. It's number 2 or number 5, which talks about another challenge with recycling, right? Which is with plastics, you have 7 numbers inside there, of which number 1 is your bottle, which your
like a water
bottle is number 1. That's PET. Number 2 is HDP or high density polyethylene. That's what we use at ADS. Number 5 is polypropylene. We use that at ADS. The other ones, I'm not really sure what they are. Right. And I think that's one of the challenges when you're talking about.
So what's 2 or 5 in my house?
So 2 or 5, 2 would be your Tide or your milk bottle. So your Tide jug, your milk bottle. And number 5 would be a yogurt container is polypropylene or something that you get food in.
Fast food
cup. From a takeout. And so those are the two types that we use. But again, you're standing there looking at your blue box. You've got something in your hand and you flip it over and you're like, oh, gosh, what can be recycled here in Columbus, Ohio? And Jeff will tell you it's probably 1, 2 and 5. But if you're standing in California, what is it? Like, no one's told me. I'm not sure what they pick up here, right? Can I put in my number 1 or my number 2? And so that's some of the challenges that we face, which is, can I put this here? And it changes as you get across the country with different municipalities and where you go. And so, you know, not only is access, number 1, let's make access to recycling, increase that. Number 2 is education around what can and cannot be recycled. There's this concept that you may have heard of called wish cycling. Which is I throw something into the box and I wish that this gets recycled.
Well, am I not supposed to do that?
You're not supposed to. Jeff will tell you why you're
Please
not supposed to
do that.
Okay, Jeff. Let's wish cycling. Well-intentioned act, but it's putting something that cannot be recycled into the bin. Is that bad?
No, that's 100% bad. What we really want folks to do is really understand about what can go in the bin and what can't go in the bin and really try to stick to those type of containers. So to Brian's point a little bit, what we try to do is we don't try to say, because what you just said, what does that mean? I don't even know what that means. So we try to make it as simple as we can. So we don't use numbers and we don't use HDPE or probably we don't use those things, those resins that plastic is made of.
Yeah.
We actually just use pictures and descriptions.
Yeah.
So we try to make it as simple as if it's a bottle, a jug, a tub, or a cup, put it in the recycling bin. So we don't want you turning these things upside down and looking at the number. If it's one of those shapes and it has that description or it looks like that picture, then don't even think about it. Put it in the recycling bin. If it tears and it's paper, right, put it in the recycling bin. If it's glass, put it in the recycling bin. If it's a steel can, put it in the recycling bin. If it's an aluminum can, put it in the recycling bin. So we try to make it that simple as we possibly can. But then you can get really granular about different types of plastics, right? But we're really focusing on jugs, tubs, cups, and what did I say? I'm
talking
in bottles.
Don't put
those. Those are what we're focused on.
Don't put them in there either.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's really what we want.
If I put things in the recycling bin that should not be recycled, does it ruin my whole week of saving? Like, does it mess up the whole bin?
Yeah, it kind of does. We're going to sort out the recycling that was supposed to be in there, and the contamination will go another direction. But when the material shows up at our facility, right now today in the Columbus, Ohio, our contamination rate's about 15%. So that means 15%.
I would have thought it was higher.
No,
okay.
It's actually pretty good compared to other cities. Now, if you're in Chicago or LA or some of those types of cities, I mean, it can go up to 30, 35% contamination in the recycling bin. So we do pretty good in Ohio. So that's really a testament to everybody that lives here that they're kind of doing a lot of the right things. But still, how do we get that 15% contamination rate down? So we're seeing things like clothing, wires, and brake drums and we get garbage bags, we get, you know, Christmas lights, garden hoses, bowling balls. So we get all these things that aren't supposed to be in there that people are just putting in the bin that we're having to deal with, right? And so all of our employees and those things, and I will tell you one other thing that we don't want in the bin is lithium ion batteries. So please keep the batteries out of the bin because they start fires in our facilities.
So, I was going to ask you what the most common wish cycled items were. And I would think like clothing and just putting a plastic bag, like a trash bag, yes, in the bin is probably the most common problem.
They are. Yeah. We cannot control low-density polyethylene, which is a Walmart sack or a Meijer bag or a Kroger bag, or those are trash bags. Mm-hmm. They end up wrapping around our equipment, causing issues. And then they're so light, they kind of just, we can't control them in the facility, and they contaminate our paper and other things. So we ask that you kind of take those back to the Kroger store and drop them off there, mm-hmm, where they can be sent back into. And all those bags that you drop it off at the Kroger store and you put it in that box at the entrance of a grocery store, all that's going back into composite decking. So if you think about when you go to Lowe's or Home Depot and you're buying Trex decking or those type of things, that's what that material goes back into. So that's a good thing to continue to do that.
So, Brian, the type of plastic that is a plastic bag, you don't want that for your drain pipes.
You want
the harder plastic.
We want harder plastic. And like Jeff mentioned, I mean, we use it, we take it from a single use, so a milk jug or a Tide container, and we put it into a durable good, which is used to manage water. I think we talked about that last time I was here. And that can go in the ground for up to 100 years. Mm-hmm. And so that really takes that plastic from a single use and puts it into a use that, you know, we feel is a good use of plastics. Because there's a lot of conversation about if plastics are good or bad. And that's a good use of plastic. But it requires, you know, people to actually do the recycling on that side. So, yes, please take all your I'll do it in Jeff's terms, all your jugs and bottles, I think we would.
Tubs and cups.
We would take all those.
Our guests this hour are Brian King from Advanced Drainage Systems and Jeff Snyder from Rumpke Waste and Recycling. And we're going to continue talking about recycling, and we're going to get into the life cycle of plastics and how it's being extended here in Ohio in just a moment. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
It's rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. For decades, we've been encouraged to recycle to lessen our impact on the environment. However, not everything can be recycled. And even with the best of intentions, many things still end up in a landfill. We're talking about the process and what can and cannot be recycled with Jeff Snyder, Senior Vice President of Recycling for Rumpke Waste and Recycling, and Brian King, Executive Vice President of Product Management and Marketing for Advanced Drainage Systems. So, Brian, Advanced Drainage Systems, one of the largest recyclers of plastic in North America. You're located right here in Central Ohio, so that can be a big claim to fame for us. Walk me through the process of what you're doing with this plastic. Where are you getting it from, and then what happens?
So we get it in a couple of different forms. We buy bales from Jeff, which is a bale of plastic, which he sorted in the Rumpke MRF. And we take that to one of our facilities. We basically wash it, clean it, chip it, turn it into a pellet, and then we ship that pellet to one of our manufacturing facilities, and then that pellet is extruded into a plastic product. In most of the cases, it's drainage pipe, which is used in a variety of different applications. So agricultural, if you're in a field and you're draining water out of a field using tiling, that's our product. If you're underneath any residential or commercial development, that you need to manage stormwater, and it's probably going through an ADS pipe.
Okay, so when we think of plastic, we think plastic is bad. We think plastic is bad for the environment. It never breaks down. But in this case, you don't want it to break down because you want your pipes to last forever.
That is correct. And you know, I mean, plastic does have, you know, there's a waste problem with plastic. And we have to lean into that, and we have to figure out how we solve the waste problem with plastic. Because, yes, people do think of single-use plastics, and they end up somewhere where you don't want them. And most of the time they end up in water is where they become very visible. And so how do you think about plastic from a total usage perspective? Because plastic does have some benefits, right? The greenhouse gas emissions on plastic versus metal versus wood versus some traditional materials is a lot less. And so, you know, there's a simple answer sometimes where people say, well, stop using plastic and we'll go back to using wood, or we'll go back to using, you know, paper, or we'll go back to using steel. And in those cases, there's a trade-off between your greenhouse gas emissions, your actual freight, your weight that you're transporting around. And so I think you have to look at the total life cycle. And there's a concept called life cycle analysis when you actually measure the greenhouse gas or the energy used to create your products from the beginning to the end. And a lot of the times you find that plastic products are really good. The question, though, becomes, how do you use it and what are the applications that you're actually using it for? So to answer your question long-winded way, yes, we think using plastic and especially recycled plastic to make drainage products is a really good use of plastic.
Well, you always hear people talk about whenever they think about recycling that it has to cost more money and be worse to the environment to deal with the recycled materials than to just actually like chuck it in the landfill. So so explain to me how that process that you just said where it goes from my house and it goes to Jeff's plant and then it goes to you and then you do one thing with it and then you send it somewhere else and then you turn it into a pipe. That saves the world?
That actually saves energy. I mean, that's actually more energy efficient than extracting oil, turning oil into plastic, turning plastic into plastic pellets. There's all transportation spots involved in that. And so a lot of the times recycling is a much more local activity. Here in Central Ohio, we've got great consumers who recycle lots of the materials that they purchase. We've got an investment that's been made in the community to have a materials recovery facility, and we have manufacturing plants across Ohio. So it's very, very close. It's very, very local. And so the amount of energy to move things around that supply chain is a lot less than, drilling oil in the Gulf, moving it to a refinery in Texas, pulling that up to somewhere in one of our manufacturing plants. And so when you look at it that way, for the total cycle and the greenhouse gas emissions, recycled plastic is really good versus using virgin material.
And so, Jeff, tell me about getting it from my house to your plant and then getting it to Brian. What about your end of the process?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to pick it up at your curb, or we're going to have a drop-off. There's lots of drop-off areas around Ohio where people can take their recyclings and just drop them off if they don't have curbside. All that material is picked up via truck and is brought to our material recovery facility. We're actually kind of coining a different phrase, and we're calling it a recycling or resource center, which is really, really, truly what it is.
Good marketing.
So we really like to call it that. And it gets dumped on a tip floor, and then we run it up through our equipment that we installed using different things from sizing technology like trommels to being able to sort two-dimensional from three-dimensional or basically segregate the paper away from the containers. We're using artificial intelligence to go deeper into the stream to be able to identify things by shape, color, and size, which is completely new within the last 3 years. And then we use near-infrared optical scanners. So an optical scanner is actually using a wave of light to shine down on a particular package. And then how that wave of light is reflected back identifies the resin that container is made of, and then tells an air jet to blow it off the belt at the right time in the right place. So being able to sort the different plastics into the different streams to be able to have a very, very clean stream of fiber. The aluminum cans and then the glass and the steel is very, very important. We operate and own our own glass plant in Dayton, Ohio. So we're making a fiberglass insulation fine grind that goes back into like Johns Manville or Owens Corning to be made back into fiberglass insulation. And then we also are making the amber and the flint or the clear glass that goes back into bottles and jars. One thing is that 80% of the stuff that you recycle in the state of Ohio stays in the state of Ohio. So to Brian's point, we're lowering the amount of trucking and the transportation that we're actually taking this material to once we sort it. And then it's turned back into things right here in the state of Ohio, specifically on the plastic side. So it's just a great story. And then we're creating jobs by doing that as well. So we love the story. We love the circular economy behind it.
So it is a misconception and an old school thought when people think that what they recycle ends up going to China, for an example. That's something. Did that ever used to happen? Or
it
is
did.
It, just a...
it did. So back in 2006 to 2008, a lot of what we produced would be exported out of the country, specifically on the plastic side. There used to be a grade of plastic that they would call 3 through 7s. You remember Brian talked about every plastic has a number associated with it. So, and that was before polypropylene was really recyclable and all that stuff. So we were sending a lot of stuff to China and overseas. Green Fence came along. China's government said no longer will we accept recyclables. No longer will we accept paper. coming to our country. So, you know, everybody really thought that was kind of a freak out moment. Like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And it was probably the best thing that could have happened to the United States because it really forced us to go and look at our processes and clean up our streams. So because of that, we were able to make a cleaner stream. We were able to find our domestic outlets, and then more of them kind of came online, which was really, really good as well. So we're very fortunate, in specifically in the Midwest, to have an end-user network that can take the material that you put at the curb, and basically what they're going to do is they're going to flake it or pelletize it. They're going to clean it and wash it. They're going to make sure it's pure, and then they're going to sell that material back to Coke or back to the brands. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing we really haven't mentioned yet, the demand for post-consumer resin in packaging by the brands. So think about Procter & Gamble or Colgate-Palmolive or Coke or Pepsi or any of those folks. They're wanting that recycled content back in the packaging that they make.
Do you have enough plastic to make all the pipes you want?
Well, Jeff just made a really interesting comment, right, about the demand of recycled materials and the fact that there is more demand for recycled material now. So no, I would tell you right now, we need more recycled material. We would like to have more recycled material because the demand for it is getting higher.
So do you sometimes have to source plastic
from the
old-fashioned way?
Yeah, we buy virgin resin, and I would tell you, I mean, you asked a question about the relationship between the pricing on virgin and recycled. It's something we watch every day. I mean, ultimately, mm-hmm. we're in it to make money. We're a publicly traded company, and so if virgin resin is cheaper than recycled resin, we're going to buy virgin resin, which is not a message that people like to hear, but that is part of the reality. And so that talks to your comment about how do we increase the amount of recycling? How do we get more recycled material out there? You look at Europe has more recycled material than virgin resin from a production perspective. Here in the U.S., it's flipped. And a lot of that is because, again, access, education, just, you know, the collection of the material itself. And so we just need to collectively do a better job.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about recycling. You've been listening to Brian King, Executive Vice President of Product Management and Marketing for Advanced Drainage Systems, and also Jeff Snyder, the Senior Vice President of Recycling for Rumpke Waste and Recycling. I wanted to go over two terms real quick that I saw: upcycling and downcycling. I saw an image online that explained upcycling means like turning old clothes into yarn and then it ends up being a rug. And downcycling is a book or a box becoming toilet paper. Am I describing that well? Are those good images?
Yeah, I have. I think you're close. I think when I think about downcycling, so if you think about, let's just take the toilet paper or hand towel example that you just said. So to make new toilet paper or hand towels out of recycled paper, it really has to do with sorted office waste. So it would be, you know, the materials that you have sitting around your office or around your home or those type of things that are really kind of bright and white in color. Mm-hmm. So I would not say that is downcycling at all. I say if you're going paper to paper, I think that's a really good thing. I think if you're going bottle to bottle, another great thing. I talked about corrugated boxes being recycled back into a corrugated box, also really, really good. I know that there's been, and Brian can talk about this, about, you know, taking plastics and moving into a durable good about that. I disagree with that as well. I think if we are taking material that is destined to the landfill and we can set up systems and processes that material can end up back into something new that doesn't go into the landfill and get buried and sit there for years and years, then that is a good thing. And I think we need to continue to do those things. So there's a lot of controversy around upcycling and downcycling, specifically on downcycling.
So what is downcycling? How would you define it as a recycling man?
I would say that downcycling would be something that you would that would end up in your recycling bin that would potentially have to go into something that maybe is not going to be usable. All right. Mm. So, and I'm trying to think of a really good example of that, but that's how I would define downcycling. I don't think downcycling is taking a plastic bottle and turning it back into carpeting. To me, that's not downcycling, right? That's turning a plastic bottle that's made of PET back into something that's a PET polyester, which is carpeting. And when we do that in the United States, right? We PET bottles get made back into carpeting. So I don't define that as downcycling. I would say downcycling is more of something that gets turned into that's not usable.
Okay. Yeah, so you don't downcycle.
Well, you're trying to get me all fired up. they use plastic pipe as an example of downcycling, which is you take something that could be used as a bottle again, and then you use it in a durable good. I would tell you, I think downcycling as a concept is not a thing. I don't think you downcycle when you take a material and you turn it into a durable good that's going to last for 100 years and it's going to manage water. To me, that seems like a pretty good value. And oh, by the way, we get paid a decent amount of money to do that. To me, downcycling is a concept where you're trying to, and this is one of the challenges I think we have as a recycling industry. We'd start to talk about, well, this is a better use of recycled material versus this. So this is upcycling and this is downcycling. Any use, to Jeff's point, where you divert material from a landfill and you give it a life doing something other than what it was going to do, which was sit in a landfill forever, that is a good use of recycling. We need to stop talking and trying to compare things as this is a better use of recycling and this is a poor use of recycling. Anytime you recycle is a good thing. And the industry likes to, for whatever reason, and Jeff and I have been on stage at a couple of industry events, and you start to bring up this concept of downcycling. We just need to stop talking about that. Any recycling is good. Get rid of the word. It doesn't really help us. And the other thing about the recycling industry, too, is we tend to look for the silver bullet. Every time we're like, oh, once we have this, it'll solve the problem. The problem is going to be solved based on a lot of what Jeff and I have talked about today, which is access to recycling, education about what you can recycle, making sure that you think about end of life. And actually, you know, a lot of times when I went to school as a product manager, you never thought about what happens to the product at the end of the life. I was thinking more about how do I meet Amy's needs and make this product so compelling that she wants to buy it. Once she's bought it, don't care. That's a very old school way of thinking. We as product management marketers have to think about what happens at end of life to make it easy to get into a MRF, to be able to be broken apart, to be able to be reused again. So the whole concept of recycling, we need to think about product usage. Anytime you can divert product from a landfill and give it a valuable good that someone is willing to pay for, that's a good thing.
Listeners, you can join our conversation about recycling if you have questions that I haven't asked yet. What hard to dispose of item are you wondering what to do with? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have John on the line. John, what's your question?
It's more a comment. According to the list that we have up, you know, next to our trash can, number one and number two plastic is the ones they want. They're not interested in 3 through 5. And this is the Lima recycling program. And I've watched them, our pickup people, I've watched them dump the recycling right in the trash, right with the trash load.
Okay. What would you say to that if they're seeing their blue bin go in with the trash?
First of all, if that's a Rumpke truck, John, I'd love to have a phone call on that, because that should not ever, ever be happening. We really try to focus on tubs, jugs, cups, and all those descriptions, but we do take ones, twos, and fives. We do not take number three plastic. Number three plastic is PVC. Number four plastic is low-density polyethylene. Number six plastic is polystyrene. So think about like Red Solo cups or straws, those type of things. And then number seven plastic is other. So it's like all other resins kind of mixed together. So we're really focused on those ones, twos, and fives, your bottles, your jugs, your cups, your tubs, which is polypropylene, which is your number five plastic. If you ever see that, cause I know the city of Lima all comes here to Columbus and gets sorted. And so that material, we want it, should never end up in a trash truck, because we do not send recycling. We did the largest investment in Central Ohio in recycling, and we didn't do that for material to go to landfill. We did that so that we can get all the material coming to our Central Ohio recycling center. We're processing 17,000 tons a month of curbside recycling in Central Ohio. And we have the ability to process over 22,000 tons a month. So we have huge capacity. We built the facility large so that we could have it there for the future of recycling here in Central Ohio, and be able to bring in more and more and more material. So we have huge capacity, and we definitely want your recycled material. So I'd love to talk to you offline about that scenario, because we can definitely fix that.
Is there a phone number, that like a general number he could call, or do you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can just go on Rumpke.com, and there's a customer service number on there, and those folks can definitely help you. And then you know, heck, I want to give him my personal cell number.
But well, maybe don't do that on the radio. But he can find you somehow.
That's how passionate I am about it. Yeah. That should never happen.
You recently added, you being Rumpke, recently added the clamshells as a plastic. I don't know what number they are, but I was excited about that, like the strawberry containers, the salad containers, things that clamp down.
Absolutely, yeah. So we added that in November of last year. The reason we were able to add that, so you can't make new water bottles out of thermoform clamshells. So we had to have a way inside our facility to sort the clamshells away from the water bottles. They're all PET. They're all number one plastics. And we were able to do that by using AI. So now we can tell the difference between a clamshell and a water bottle and send them different directions. And because of that, I can now have a different stream that can be recycled. So, yes, we want all of the clamshells coming to our Columbus facility, and we are moving that back into a recycled resin, a PET post-consumer resin.
And we have an email from someone, I think it's Ada, Ohio, A-D-A. They say that for years there was a recycling station just outside of town. They drove there religiously. And then about 5 years ago, the station went away. And they feel like the next nearest station is more than 15 miles away. Mm-hmm. So they feel like it's not financially feasible to drive the recycling 15 miles. So now they gave up, too much trouble. How do we get recycling closer to people who live in more remote areas?
Yeah, so we're working on that. So we're working on more curbside. A lot of that work is done with the municipality or the city or the county that we're working with. We're also working on more drop-offs where it makes sense. So we want to have more places that can do that. Again, we work with the city that you live in. So we work with the city of Ada, or we'd work with that county to be able to provide those access points. But that's really, you know, it's fun to add clamshells to the recycling bin. It's fun to add tubs. It's fun to add cups and talk about all these new waste things that would traditionally went to the landfill that can now go in the recycling bin. But also, too, I don't ever want to lose focus like on the blocking and tackling of recycling. And that is providing access, increasing participation, increasing education, and helping people understand that it's real. There's always these little pockets of negativity out in the United States about recycling's bad and it goes to the landfill. I will tell you that we invested in Central Ohio to have a recovery rate on recyclables of over 98%. Mm-hmm. So that means if you put it in the recycling bin, it shows it at our facility, we're going to recover over 98% of those recycled commodities, which in our industry is unheard of. I mean, so we're very proud of that.
We hear those stories through the recycling partnership a lot, too, that in more rural areas that you have had programs that have gone away because they're not economically sustainable. And so the recycling partnership, which is a 501(c) nonprofit, they spend dollars to try to encourage different municipalities to do that. But what they need is the partnership of industry to be able to do that. Because the worst thing, too, is when you collect recyclables and they just sit there. And probably, not knowing much about Ada's program, but I would imagine what probably happened was they had no market for it. And so ultimately, it's like, we don't know where to go. We don't know what's going on. We can't get rid of this product, so we'll just stop the program. And that's something we hear about all across the U.S. They didn't know where to take it, or the program was, you know, we weren't collecting enough. People weren't aware of where the drop-off points were. Mm-hmm. And so it talks a lot about what Jeff is talking about. We need to fund those types of programs. And the Recycling Partnership helps fund those programs for municipalities who are interested in doing them. But it can't just be through, you know, a 501(c) nonprofit. It has to be through, and we haven't talked about policy, but some smart policy around recycling, too, would certainly help. Recycling is one of those concepts that both sides of the aisle tend to get interested about recycling. It's not a polarizing issue. Everybody thinks that recycling is a good thing. Either it creates jobs, it's good for the environment. It's something that people can get behind. In fact, there's actually a bill in the Ways and Means Committee at this Congress right now called the Circle Act, which, if it gets made into a law, will actually provide a tax credit for investments in recycling, like Jeff and the Rumpke organization has done. So there is work being done there, but smart policy is part of this as well, too.
All right, we're going to continue talking about recycling, but we have to take a quick break. All Sides continues in a moment here on 89.7 NPR News.
It's rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We are talking about what you need to know about recycling at home and at work this hour. We've been taught that recycling is good for the environment and the right thing to do, but for many, it's just an extra step, and sometimes you are not sure if you're even doing it right. Does it make a difference? Teaching us more about how to recycle properly, we have Jeff Snyder, the Senior Vice President of Recycling with Rumpke Waste and Recycling. Jeff, thanks again for being here.
Absolutely.
And Brian King, the Executive Vice President of Product Management and Marketing for Advanced Drainage Systems, one of the largest recyclers of plastic in North America. Thanks for being here, Brian.
No problem.
All right, so I want to get to a couple of questions. Jenny in Lewis Center, what's your question?
I've always heard that term about wishful recycling, and that if you don't think it's if you're not sure, like you just stick it in, I don't know. But so I wanted to know about that. Should we just stick it in, or should we carefully try to analyze the website to see if it's recyclable? And are those Amazon packages that you zip open, are those now recyclable?
All right, double question there. But first of all, for a wish cycling, if you're not sure, what would you rather people do?
I'd rather them not put it in the recycling bin.
Okay.
we put things online. We have frequently asked questions online that folks can go on our website at rumpke.com and understand what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, how to prepare recycling. And we really ask our residents and our customers to kind of stick to that criteria. When you put things in there that you're not sure about, if it's not part of that list, then it's part of our contamination. And if we can recycle it, rest assured that we're going to put it on that list.
Hmm. And she also asked about Amazon packages. The ones that are kind of papery, those can be recycled.
Absolutely.
But the plasticky ones?
Absolutely. So if they're brown or if they're paper, we definitely want those in the recycling bin every single time. If you're thinking about the white and the blue one that's kind of a bubble wrappy feel to it, that's plastic, those are not acceptable in traditional recycling. There is a program out there in Ohio, in Central Ohio, called the Hefty Renew Program. The Hefty Renew Program is a program that you can participate in if you choose to, by going to any of the local grocery stores and buying the Hefty Renew Orange Bags. The Hefty Renew Orange Bags is a way, I always call the orange bag a vehicle, on how to put film and think about styrofoam and think about anything that's film related in your home. The Amazon bag that we're talking about would go into this bag. So what you do is you set it up in your home, just like you would do your traditional recycling program, all that film and all that stuff. And on the front of the bag, it tells you exactly what you can put in it. So there's absolutely no question about what can go in the bag or not go in the bag. But it's going to really reduce the amount of trash in your house immensely because of all the film that you can put in this bag. And then you tie up the bag. When it's full, you put it in your recycling bin. We'll come around. We pick it up. It ends up at our facility. And then those bags get dumped onto the floor. They go up into the process. And one of the very first things we do is we pull off that entire orange bag, and all the contents stay inside the bag. Those bags go into a bunker. When that bunker becomes full, we bale the bags. And then those bags are sold back into the marketplace, going back into like plastic pallets or plastic railroad ties or plastic lumber. Those type of things. So it's a way for a resident or one of our customers to go above and beyond the traditional recycling program. And if they would choose to participate, it's a way that they can recycle film.
I will attest, I do the orange bags, and there is a lot of plastic that it takes. It's a lot of things that I would feel bad about that now I can put into this orange bag. And it does cost a little bit of money to buy the bags, but I feel okay about that. As I mentioned earlier, I'm just trying to save the world. and I just wanted to run through, before we run out of time, a couple of other questions we have. Ed in Grafton, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, hi. Two quick questions. Caps on bottles, the plastic bottles, leave them on or take them off?
Yeah, so leave those caps on.
The caps.
Yeah, the cap on a plastic bottle is polypropylene. The actual bottle is PET. So here's the rule I always tell people. if it's the same substrate and it's the same material, then leave it together. So plastic and plastic cap, plastic bottle, leave it together. Think about it like a Vlasic pickle jar or a Prego spaghetti sauce jar or something like that that has a metal lid and a glass container. Segregate those. So if they're different substrates, segregate them. If they're the same material or same substrate, leave them together.
We had someone who was on the line, but I think that they hung up. They were saying that they put glass jars in the recycling, and then when they hear the truck come by, they hear all the glass jars breaking as it goes into the truck, and it makes them feel bad. Does that matter?
No, it doesn't matter. Go ahead and put your glass jars, whether it's wine or beer or any of the jars that your food comes in, just put them in your recycling bin. If they get dumped into the truck, then they'll break. The compaction truck could also break them. When they get dumped on our floor, they'll also break. I will tell you that all the glass that runs through our facility is broken. So it ends up broken. We sort it out of the rest of the commodities, and then we sell it. We send it to our Dayton facility where we do further sorting and cleaning to make it into those three commodities, go back to the market.
What about leaving the cap on the milk jug? Is that related to the other bottles you
just
said?
Yeah, it relates to the same thing as the bottles. Yeah, so okay. Let's leave that cap on. So all caps on plastic bottles, if the cap is plastic, leave it together.
And another email we have is asking about the food contamination in some of the jars. Like, so your yogurt container still has a little yogurt in the bottom. Is that okay?
Yeah, here's the rule I always tell folks on that. I'm not looking for you to get out your sponge and, sponge it out or put it in your dishwasher. Just give everything a rinse, get most of the food out of it and put it in your recycling bin. Same way with a pizza box. Pizza boxes are 100% recyclable. That grease on the pizza box is not going to cause a problem in the recycling process. We just ask that folks take the crust and the cheese and the sausage out of the box. So, but other than that, the grease in the bottom of the box is not an issue.
Okay. And so what about like a ketchup bottle or peanut butter jar, one that's really annoying to clean out?
Yeah. Ketchup, maybe you have to put the water in there and shake it up a little bit and dump out the residue that's left in the bottle. This is what I tell people on peanut butter, because peanut butter is such a hard thing to get out of the plastic jar, is just fill your peanut butter jar with water, leave it overnight in your sink, and then the next morning it should come right out and should be able to dump it out, and then you can put the jar in the recycling bin.
So that's enough effort.
That's enough. All right. Absolutely.
Excellent. And Jennifer, go ahead. What's your question?
Mail and packaging that is made of mixed materials, like a donut box that has a plastic window over, it's a cardboard box. Do I need to tear that plastic off first, or tear the plastic off the front of the junk mail envelopes?
Okay, yes. We missed the beginning of what Jennifer said. I think we got cut off a little bit. So she's asking about mixed material, junk mail, those credit card offers that have that are all paper but have a little piece of plastic to show your address.
Yeah, if you want to be like the best recycler ever, take those plastic things off of those paper commodities. But here's the spec in the industry, and this is nationally. For every ton of paper that we produce or that we sell back into a paper mill, you're allowed 2% non-fiber, non-paper in that bale. So that means you're allowed 40 pounds of stuff that's not paper is allowable in the bale. In the paper-making process and the pulping process, and when they make new paper, can handle a little bit of contamination. But if you really want to do it right and you want to be this, you want to make sure you make it as easy as you possibly can, and make sure that always 100% gets recycled the right way, then we ask that you take those non-fiber items like plastic and tear it away from the paper.
Okay, yeah, we were talking actually at the break, because I was saying that for a Kleenex box, a tissue box, there's that little bit of plastic around it, but the whole rest of the box is cardboard. Yep. So if I want to be the best recycler ever, I can take the plastic off.
Tear that plastic off.
But if I forget to, it's okay.
We can deal with it.
All right.
Yeah, well, the industry can deal with it.
The industry can deal
with
it.
That's right.
All right. And Brian, I wanted to bring you back into the conversation. What do you want people to know about plastic, about what you're making and what you're trying to do with your plastic pipes, and hoping that they last 100 years? What do you want people to know?
I think the first thing I want people to know is plastic recycling works. That alone, like if you actually put your plastics in your recycled box, that if they're the right ones, they will get used as a recycled material, because there's a lot of doubt that plastic recycling works, and plastic gets, like we talked earlier, gets a lot of bad rap about being bad. But if we do that, it's better than plastic ending up in a landfill or plastic potentially ending up in a lake, river, or stream, because we frankly want that. We have a goal of using 1 billion pounds of recycled material by 2032. We don't get there unless there's a lot of supply of that material to be used, because in our case, the performance characteristics of the product are equally as good if we use recycled material or virgin plastic. Mm-hmm. So really, it just becomes a financial conversation. And you know, we'd love to make the right choice, which is we'd love to use recycled material if we have that material available.
And Jeff, we have less than a minute left, but we had several people call in while you were talking about the Orange Bag program, wanting you to talk about the Orange Bag program. So I guess people are excited about it. Are you seeing a lot of use of it?
We're getting in Central Ohio, we run a 2-shift operation in Columbus, and we're probably getting somewhere between 50 and 70 bags per shift. So people are doing it. It takes a family of two. Me and my wife, it'll take us a month to fill a bag, because you keep pushing material down into it. So the bags do kind of last a little bit longer. But yeah, we're getting them, and we're getting them recycled, and we're moving it into a reuse state.
Do you pay Hefty, or does Hefty pay you?
Hefty pays us for the material.
Oh,
yeah. And listen, Hefty makes plastic film, right? They make plastic bags. So for them, from a sustainability standpoint, they want to make sure they're doing something. They can get plastic material back to a reuse state. It's good for them.
All right. Well, we have run out of time. Hopefully we got some recycling questions answered and we got more explained about good plastic. I want to say thank you to Brian King, Executive Vice President of Product Management and Marketing for Advanced Drainage Systems. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And also Jeff Snyder, Senior Vice President of Recycling for Rumpke Waste and Recycling. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Amy.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.